Today on Rambling About Cars, the 2023 LA Auto Show is about to begin, but Toyota started the party a little bit early. We've got a new Camry, we've got a new Crown Signia SUV, and if you're not really interested in that sort of thing, how about a $50 million Ferrari? We're going to talk about that. If you're not interested in that, how about a blown-up engine? Everybody loves that. And then, ladies and gentlemen, the toughest cheap car challenge we've ever had. I'm saying it right now, so you want to stay tuned for that. Let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, Mr. Chris Bruce, across the way. How you doing, man?
I'm doing okay. I will say, for a cheap car challenge, for the first time ever in our cheap car challenges, and you can't get on me for this one because you do it all the time, I had to cheat. We didn't agree on a price or anything like that, and so I cheated this time. But I will say, our cheap car challenge, for anyone who wants to participate in while you're listening to the show, we are looking for the most interesting Toyota Camry you can find. Whatever that means to you.
Crickets. It means crickets. The most interesting / fun to drive or just fun different Toyota Camry we can find. We didn't set any price point.
We did not, and I cheated. I will tell the folks right now, I will tease that, because when we get there, you will see I cheated, but I had to. So
it's a tough challenge. It was tougher. Interesting
and Toyota Camry are not words that you hear a lot of together. And so you had to get creative and I got creative. That's all I'm going to say until we get to that segment.
I definitely want to stay tuned for that. We have a lot to talk about. We'll give folks a few minutes to chime in. If you're new to the program, electrified light vehicles?
I think you're a first-time commenter. I haven't seen you before, but he said, let's ramble like it's the Royal Rumble. I agree.
Yeah, boy! We can do that. We can ramble. We're very good at rambling. We excel at rambling. Let's give folks a little bit to chime in. If you are new, like electrified light vehicles, thank you for joining us.
Totally.
You can chime in, whether you're catching us on Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter, Motor One on YouTube, any of those outlets, you can type in a comment. It comes in right here, right now, into our little digital screens that we, Bruce and I, have in front of us. We can see your comments. We can respond to you directly, and we love to. So everybody jump in, say where you're from, say hi, say hello. Bruce, how's the project car going, man? Before we get into the big news.
I was going to say two things about that. So first off, I will be seeing it for the very first time physically in my own eyes this weekend, because I will be visiting my parents. That's where it's living right now. So I will get to see the project car, the 1984 Nissan 300 ZX Turbo, for the very first time this weekend. And nice. Also, my dog, I've got to hold this up here, he slipped out of his leash, so I need to go pick him up right now because he is licking his toe a lot. So you give me a half a second.
So audio listeners, and we still love you, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Deezer, iHeartRadio. We still love our audio listeners. If you manage to get over to Motor One.com on Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter, Motor One on YouTube, you can see Bruce going after his trusty little sidekick. Cooper, we adore you.
Trusty is an interesting word.
You are crafty.
As far as I could throw him, and he's a pretty big guy.
But. And I was going to say, Bruce, I've been making a little fun of you here the last day or two in our team's chat about your non-driving 300ZX. You are still well ahead of me because my show project, A, does not start. I still haven't figured that out yet. I think I know what's going on. I just got to get to it. B, doesn't roll. Pretty much all the brakes are locked up. C, doesn't really have any rocker panels. They're a little rusted out. They're a bit more rusty than I thought. But when I hook a battery up, I do get the lights that come on the inside that light up. There are some lights on the dash
right now, so you might beat me there.
The radio doesn't work. Three of the four windows do work. I haven't tried the moonroof because I'm crazy enough to buy a Taurus show parts car or a project car. It might end up being a parts car the way this goes. I'm not stupid enough to try to operate that moonroof that's likely not been used in 10 years. So that's the status.
It's interesting that you bring that up because I have been wanting to ask the audience this question. So the 300ZX I have, it has a very fancy, for the time, cassette radio where it has the chrome button that you can put in. So if it has the chrome on the cassette tape, you can like
chrome better tapes. Sound. Oh my gosh.
So I've been curious. Listeners, tell me, what is the first tape I should try to listen to in this vehicle?
I have the answer.
I have my answer in my head. It's Journey.
Oh,
was I was going to start with? Oh, what do you got?
Bon Jovi, Slippery When Wet.
Okay, I think both of those are good responses.
That's got to be in there. It's got to be in there.
It's going to just complete. Keep in mind, it might completely destroy the tape as soon as I put it in. So it has to be a tape. It can't be anything too rare. Oh, I got Led Zeppelin says
Electrified Light Vehicle says Led Zeppelin. Okay. Can't really go 80s. Wrong there, I suppose.
I think it's got to be 80s. That's why I was thinking Journey. I agree. Bon Jovi is a good choice. I think it's got to be something 80s, but we'll see. But again, it has to be something you're willing to destroy. It's not.
No Garth Brooks, please.
No Garth Brooks.
No Garth Brooks. We can agree.
With that in mind, let's get this show rolling.
Yeah.
We have kind of a lot of big automotive news. The Los Angeles Auto Show is just kicking off. I think technically the first press day is tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, November. Yep, November 16th, because it opens to the public on Friday, November 17th. Right. So
that's what it is. Yeah.
So I think if I can't recall if there was an official press day today or not, but
I don't think there. We didn't hear anything if there was. I think it's got to be tomorrow.
And as with all auto shows, automakers usually, if they have any plans, they might start it a day or two even before press days, just to try to get a little bit of attention, you know, kind of separate themselves. And that's what we're having here. If you caught the podcast last week, we had a little bit of an LA Auto Show preview where we talked about the new Ford Mustang GT California Special that debuted last week, but will be at LA. Now we have debuts from Toyota. And
lots of
They're big. The 2025 Toyota Camry is what we'll lead off with, because that's arguably the biggest, because it is the most the best selling sedan in the United States. In a world of SUVs, I think it's still, I don't think it's in the top five, but I think it's just outside of the top five, or if not, it's at least still in the top 10.
Number five, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's which is huge.
Ford F-Series, Chevy, Silverado, Ram, Toyota RAV4, and then Camry was number five, I believe, last year. So it is in the top five because it is number five.
Yeah, for a segment that's supposed to be declining, and it is. I mean, let's be honest, it is. Toyota is still right there with the Camry. So anytime you take one of your best-selling vehicles and you change it up, it's a big deal. This is technically, and this is from Toyota. This is technically the ninth generation Camry. They're considering it a new generation, but Bruce, you wrote this up. Why don't you explain to the Ramblers, what's really going on here?
So it still rides on the previous generation's platform, which is the TGNAK platform. And there are still, if you look at it, it looks like to me there are still some body panels shared, especially along the sides.
Oh, yeah.
The doors look to me like they're the same. Maybe there are some slight differences. I don't know. The front and rear are different, though. And
still a lot of similarity in my eyes.
Yeah. But yeah, exactly. The big news is under the hood, where now, at least for 2025, and we're going to touch on this here in a minute, you only get the Camry as a hybrid vehicle. It's going to come with two powertrains. There's a front-wheel drive version. Both of them use a 2.5-liter four-cylinder. The front-wheel drive version has two electric motors that makes 225 horsepower. The all-wheel drive version adds an additional motor, so for a total of three, that motor goes onto the rear axle, and so you end up making 232 horsepower. All of them use an electronically controlled continuously variable transmission, an ECVT. So that is the powertrain for the new Camry. And so, yeah, no V6 is kind of the big thing, at least now for 2025. And I keep saying for 2025 because we talked to Toyota about this, and they were cagey, it's safe to say, because there's also no TRD model for the 2025 model year. And they're like, no, there is no V6 and no TRD for 2025. Does that mean that those things are dead? Not necessarily. They're just not coming next year.
Yeah, dead for now. I mean, it's pretty safe to say, okay, this is the new model 2025 Toyota Camry.
Yes.
Technically, they're calling it a new generation. When you get into the nuts and bolts, it's really more like a very heavy refresh. But yeah, the big news with that hybrid powertrain being it, no V6 option, no TRD. And just from my years on the automaker side in comms, I mean, you're trained to very seldom commit to anything. You always want to leave a door open somewhere just in case somebody like us at some point catches something and, oh, okay, that's a definitive, we're going to run with that. You always try to leave things open because, I mean, you never know. Will the V6 come back? I'm going to do a little bit of speculation right now.
Okay,
I don't think we'll see
a match up here.
I don't think we'll see another V6 Camry. If they're going to go with a higher performance model, I think they'll go with their max hybrid setup that puts out 340 horsepower. I think I'm just pulling that off the top of my head. I can't remember for sure. But there's that option already there. They just have to put it into the Camry. And I mean, why wouldn't you? The V6 Camry has been around since...
I looked it up, dude. 1988.
Okay, 1988. So it was there for a while. It was a staple. I don't feel bad that it's gone, but I know it makes a difference to a lot of people. But that's sort of my take going forward here. I mean, you still have pretty much all of the familiar Toyota Camry trims. The XLE and XSE, I think, are the range toppers. You're getting a standard issue 7-inch digital instrument cluster, 8-inch infotainment screen, or the upscale versions are 12.3 inches, I think, for both.
Yes.
There's
the instrument cluster and the infotainment
screen. Yes. Yep. There's a head-up display in there. I love head-up displays. We don't have any pricing. It's an option. Yes, thanks for pointing that out. We don't have any pricing information yet. It's going to go on sale in the spring. Pricing will be available, obviously, closer to when it goes on sale. It's like I said in the beginning here, when an automaker remakes one of their best-selling vehicles, it's always a big deal, and it's always a bit nerve-wracking, I imagine, for the executives at the company. Okay, did we just make a colossal mistake that's going to tank sales? Honestly, I think this is a pretty safe move. It feels like a safe move. I imagine it's going to feel much like the existing Camry because underneath the skin, it pretty much is. Obviously, the powertrain being hybrid only is different here. And didn't Toyota also upgrade the suspension a little bit? They made some tweaks to the suspension.
They had brand new shocks, new tuning. That completely new suspension setup there. There's some big Safety tech upgrades. I should mention all of that. So it's got the Toyota Safety Sense 3.0 system as standard. And that means you get, big list here. You get a pre-collision system that detects vehicles and pedestrians. You get adaptive cruise control, lane departure assist, roadside assist, automatic high beams, blind spot monitoring, and rear cross traffic alert. Plus, there is an optional premium plus package on the XLE and XSE, which are the two higher trims, and that adds traffic jam assist, front cross traffic alert, lane change assist, panoramic view monitor, and front and rear parking assist with automatic braking. So, yeah, basically all of the safety assists that you could kind of want in a, you know, modern vehicle.
Well, I mean, Toyota, right? It doesn't really come as any surprise. Bruce, I mean, how are you liking the styling here? I mean, we talked a little bit about the changes. Obviously, there's clearly similarity with the current model. I think if you like the current model, you're probably going to like this one. If you're not a fan of the current Camry, I mean, the front, you definitely get a little bit more flavor of their new Prius, kind of drawing in, yes, a little bit of family resemblance there, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, you and I talked, this was probably months ago now, we talked about how much we like the Prius. Somehow in this application, it looks a little bit bland to me. I can't really articulate why. It just, I'm looking at these images and they're, you know, it's a car, you know. It's not bad, it's not good, it's not whatever. It just looks like a car. And, you know, for better or worse, some people want that. Some people just, you know, that, you know, clearly we've talked about in terms of tech, this is superlative in terms of its segment. But in terms of styling, I don't know. It doesn't necessarily do anything for me. That's kind of where I'm at.
Well, I'm curious to see how it drives and feels. The last Camry I drove, I think, was a 21 model. So I'm very interested to see, okay, how this new hybrid powertrain, and that was a four-cylinder that I'd driven too. So I'm very interested to see how this powertrain matches up in this car, and the dynamics they've done with the suspension. I mean, it's a Camry. It's not a sports sedan. It's not designed to be
really more exciting. What the Camry was supposed to be.
But it is designed to get you from point A to point B in comfort and some measure of safety and security, obviously. In a nice orderly fashion. I feel like I'm trying to like dig to find good things to say about it. I think it's a good car. I think it's a very good car. The sales back it up. It's in a world of pickup trucks and SUVs, it outsells a lot of other vehicles, and there's a reason why. It's there. It gets the job done, and it doesn't look bad. I mean,
no, it's not an ugly car. It's just not.
Because I was going through all of the Camrys that I found for our cheap car challenge, and trust me, you can find cheap Camrys everywhere.
Oh. Yes, you can.
I revisited some nightmare eras where it's like, wow, Toyota, how did that even make it past the design phase? Who approved that goofy looking funky grill? Like what is it? It had to be like the late aughts or so, when it just kind of looked bulbous and really uncomfortable in its own skin. I think the new Camry, and when I say new, I'm talking about this generation, but also the one prior here. It's sleeker. It has a more streamlined look. It doesn't look quite so bulbous, but it also doesn't really stand out. And you know what? It's not supposed to.
Exactly. I don't saying a Camry is, you know, not ostentatious is kind of what it's supposed to be. Like, it's not supposed to be a car that stands out on the road. That's never been what it's been.
So let's catch up on some of our comments here. Our new commenter, electrified light vehicles. I like the new Toyota Camry hybrid with all-wheel drive. As you engage it, quite a phenomenon as you get better MPG as no one needs all-wheel drive all the time. It will be able to compete with Tesla Model 3 with price. I don't know if anybody's shopping. Yeah, we don't know price. I don't know if anybody's going to cross-shop this with a Model 3. It's an interesting take on all-wheel drive. You don't necessarily need all-wheel drive all the time. It depends on your location. I say this as I drive a Subaru Forester with all-wheel drive all the time. And I mean, it's nice to have just in case you run into some situation where, okay, I think I got good grip, and all of a sudden, no, I don't. So what else we have here for some comments?
So Grupa FBC says, I note that the horizontal black bar between the bonnet and the bumper is meant to tie in with the Prius, but I see Mark III Supra. Yes, that's a very long stretch. Yeah, that's a really long stretch, buddy. That's a real long. I don't see it, but I respect your opinion. How about that?
I can see it now that it's mentioned.
Really?
But it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it's the A70.
Third gen, the A70,
where you've got just kind of that flat nose, right, with the big, with just kind of that big stretchy bumper around it. I can see it, but it's a little bit of a stretch.
I don't necessarily, but that's fine. One thing I did wanted to say was that this is totally my prediction. I have not spoken to anyone with Toyota about this. This is totally my thing. I suspect we'll see a TRD model in the future.
Will we, though?
I don't know. I said I suspect we will.
Will we? Because Group FBC makes a good point in the comments. Might go with GR rather than TRD badging on a Halo Sports model? Instead of a Camry TRD, could there be a Camry GR Sport?
That's kind of 6-1, half dozen of the. Let me change my wording. I think we'll see a hotter version eventually, because we know that the more powerful hybrid versions of kind of the Toyotas that are available, I wouldn't be surprised whether they find their way in their Camry eventually in the future. Certainly 2025, they're saying these are the models available for 2025. You know, we don't know anything about 2026, 2027, 2028, you know, going further. It feels like there's a space for that.
Well, I mean, you know how this goes, Bruce. I mean, we've been here for a decade, right? Going through this stuff.
Yeah.
In a year, there'll be some other special edition, and then there'll be another special edition. And that's even before we get to maybe more significant things like a new proper trim level, maybe, or where you might come into a TRD or a GR Sport. We'll give it time to percolate. But for right now, yep, 2025 Toyota Camry, meet the new boss, kind of like the old boss, but with some improvements. Yeah.
The interior upgrades are kind of the biggest thing. The fact that you can get, you know, really nice screens, really big screens, 12.3-inch, you know, screens for the instruments and the infotainment. That's competitive with everything else in the segment. So, yeah.
Yeah, very good from the Toyota group on the Camry. Not the only Toyota, though, that is debuting for the LA Auto Show.
That's right.
And this one is properly new. It is the Toyota Crown Signia.
Yep. You're going to have to talk about it a second for me.
And
a hot second.
And it is the SUV that we knew Toyota was teasing. We weren't sure what it was going to be called. Now we know it is the Crown Signia. What does it have under the hood, you ask? This might sound a little familiar. It's got a, wait for it, hybrid powertrain featuring a 2.5-liter four-cylinder with two electric motors. That sounds pretty good. In this instance, though, it makes 243 horsepower. That is the only choice you have here. There isn't a different option with other motors. There's just the 2.5 liter, two electric motors, 243 horsepower. Toyota does say it has an EV only mode, but it doesn't specify exactly how fast or how far you can go. It's more like a slow speed thing here. It's inside. I should say standard all wheel drive on this. No front wheel drive. No choices. Just front wheel drive. Standard all wheel drive.
Which is interesting in a way, because if you think about it, all wheel drive Camry has an extra motor in the back.
Yeah.
So you wonder why. Clearly they can do it. Why doesn't this have a third motor in the back?
Yeah, well, we're talking a different platform here. We're talking a different vehicle. The tech is there. It's being plugged in and utilized differently here. But yes, all-wheel drive only on this. And I mean, we are talking something in the crossover SUV realm, right? This actually probably better fits the idea of a crossover. I think that people have, because you get a taste that it's more of like a lifted wagon than kind of a beefy truck like SUV.
Someone considering a Subaru Outback might cross shop this mm-hmm. with that vehicle.
I think it looks pretty good. Inside you have dual 12.3 inch displays. 12.3 for the driver, 12.3 infotainment. Standard issue, 8-way power seats for the driver and passenger up front. 19-inch wheels, Toyota SafetySense 3.0. All of the stuff that you would expect. And I think a little bit more. Coming right out with right out of the gate with a fair chunk of standard equipment. Not a bad thing at all, I don't think. One thing that we did find out here after the fact, if you're cross-shopping this against the Toyota Venza, don't. Well, because
not for long.
you won't be for long unless you're buying a used Venza, because this will be taking the place of the Venza. The Venza is being sunsetted, as Toyota says, because the new Crown Signia, it's Venza sized. It has Venza-ish styling. It's appealing to the same customer. So, darn it, we're not going to have 8 Toyota SUVs after all. We're only going to have 7. We're going to have to make do, people.
you're absolutely right.
And let me share this comment from Eric Nefron. GFR, good to see you, as always, in the comments. Will they put the Hybrid Max powertrain in the Signia? That's a good question that is not answered yet. As with the Camry, Toyota is only committing to just, here's what we have right now, 2025, the 2.5 liter, two motor, 243 horsepower powertrain. But, if you're like us, and if you're a rambler, especially a regular rambler that listens to us every week, Toyota has that powertrain in their back pocket that they can plug it in. Right.
Exactly.
To all of these vehicles that we're seeing here.
Styling
wise, honestly, I'd like this better than the Venza overall. I think the Crown sedan that we have right now, it's a little odd in its appearance.
Crown sedan every day, all day of the week.
They're obviously related, but I think Toyota's doing a fairly decent job of differentiating them enough. Yeah. I don't know if I would take this over the sedan. I kind of like them both. I think both have good presence.
You could like them both, but which would you put in your garage?
I don't know.
Okay.
That's a difficult question because I like them. I like them both. I don't see this as the Crown sedan with a little more space in the back. I see this in just a very different light. So it's a question of, do I want the wagon or do I want the sedan, which still has actually quite a bit of practicality with it.
Right. The Crown sedan is kind of kissing crossover territory. Yeah. Like when you look at it, it's mm-hmm. like, it's an almost crossover. We don't have mm-hmm. a good word for that yet, but it's close, whereas, you know, this has a little bit more practicality, etc. But
I think it looks good all around. I'm very interested to hear more about this Toyota. They offered a fair amount of information, but obviously not full disclosure on everything. You know, I mean, we still don't have information on pricing. I don't believe they said exactly when it was going to be available. I'll have to let me take a quick look at that just to double check that. Oh, okay. Next summer. So, I mean, we still have a little while to wait, and obviously pricing will be available closer to when it goes on sale. That's why it's a 2025 model. We're landing here in the summer. But yeah, I mean, come standard with a lot of good equipment. If they can price it pretty reasonably, which I'm going to guess if it's replacing the Venza, do you think it's safe to say, Bruce, that Venza might be in the neighborhood at this point?
I bet this would be a touch more, a little bit more, just because of the powertrain, but not significantly more. And our commenters are feeling the same way. I'll take the wagon all day, every day, and Eric Nephron, same. So, yeah.
Well, just for reference here, I'm looking up some Toyota information, right? Meow, and we've got the 2024 Venza starts at $34,920, and that's before destination, which I don't know exactly what destination is here. So
it's usually $995, right around.
So and keep in mind, everybody. I mean, Toyota has no information on pricing. We're just kind of going by the seat of our pants here. It's replacing the Venza in the lineup. The Venza starts $34,920. Probably conceivable that maybe it starts in the high 30s, maybe the low 40s. I mean, you're getting a fair amount of standard equipment right off the bat with the Crown Signia.
I like Grupa FBC. Two yoga mats included in the press shots. They're serious about pushing their desired demographic.
And I will say here too, because we have electrified light vehicles saying the Crown Sedan is overpriced for sure. The Crown Sedan starts at $40,050. Again, not including destination. So maybe low 40s for the Crown Signia. We'll have to wait and see.
Well, yeah, we'll have to wait and see. We don't have the numbers yet. We can only kind of guess. But from the images, from the specs, from, you know, Smith and I, we obviously haven't driven it. No one has driven it yet. But it looks like an attractive vehicle. It looks like, you know, I'll be totally honest with you, that if you were cross-shopping this against something like a Subaru Outback or, you know, vehicles like that, that would make sense. You know, some of the Volvos that are out there, this seems very competitive with those vehicles.
Yep, very good. And I should also say there is more to come yet from the LA Auto Show. There are debuts that we can't talk about yet. We know that are coming. In fact, if you jump over to MotorOne.com shortly after our podcast ends, you'll be able to catch one. We're talking a lot of U.S. debuts, so vehicles that we've already seen elsewhere that are now coming up for the United States. Sometimes there are some small changes, some small differences, especially if it comes to something like engine tuning where you might see some more power. So definitely stay tuned to MotorOne.com. Jump over there, catch some of the things. I know there's something happening right after the podcast. There'll be more debuts tomorrow. The next possibly, and you know, big debut in contention with Toyota will come from Subaru. That's coming tomorrow. We can't talk about it yet. We know what it is. But you want to go over to MotorOne.com and learn all about it. And on that front, I'm trying to think if there's anything we missed from LA. As we said last week,
there isn't, because
as we said last week, there's usually some surprises. Toyota caught us here a little bit.
There's stuff we know about, but unfortunately, because of embargoes, we can't talk about yet. And it's crappy. Yeah. It's crap. Like, you and I know what's coming, but
yeah. Well, Subaru, yeah. Subaru has already said that they're debuting something, so we can share that, and yes. it's been known, okay, that Subaru is doing something on the on the 16th, which is tomorrow. So you'll definitely want to check over for that. There are some new things coming. There are some fresh things coming.
Yeah,
so you want to check that.
It's always a, you know, it's that thing. It's where we used to record the show and then put it live on Fridays, where you and I would be able to talk about things, but we didn't have commenters at that time, and we love our commenters and we love talking about them. And it's just that kind of, you know, that balance of, you know, which do you mm-hmm. talk about stuff that we can't talk about yet, but we know about. And then, yeah, it's crappy. It's a bad situation, if we're honest with you.
Yeah. Group FEC teasers, the both of you. Well, yeah, we like to, this is a crazy concept. Bruce and I like to earn a living. So if you go over,
I gotta live. Yeah.
If you go over to MotorOne.com, all the Ramblers, if you go over to MotorOne.com, check these articles, spend some time there, read about these new vehicles. That's like the GoFundMe for Bruce and I, so we can keep doing this stuff. So yeah. Absolutely. And hey, MotorOne.com, we've got, I think the greatest staff in the motoring industry right now. I think we have just a group of solid people that have worked together for years. We've got some fresh blood that's bringing in some new stuff. So MotorOne.com, go over there, check us out, and read all of your latest needs for automotive and occasionally some fun features.
So speaking of stuff that I'm not entirely sure about, and I'm going to ask our listeners about, this is a story that did gangbusters, like just blew up our website. And this is a story about a Chevy 3-liter Duramax inline six that had some very serious issues.
Didn't we talk about this last week? Oh, that was another engine.
That was another engine.
Exactly. That literally and figuratively blew up. So yes, we said last week, hey, we're going to look into these. We're going to try to bring some more of this content.
But here's the thing. I don't know whether or not our listeners enjoy this content. And so anyone out there, tell us. If you think, you know, if people on the website like it, that's fine. We're definitely going to keep covering it there. But if you think it's boring when Smith and I talk about it, let us know and we'll pick different topics. But for right now, you know, we find that, you know, people on the site just eat this stuff up and they love it and it does gangbusters. So we want to talk about it because obviously it's popular, but there are different audiences there. That's mm-hmm. the thing. So let us know. But without Absolutely. Further ado, let's talk about a Chevy Duramax engine that had a bad day.
Bad day. Now let's clarify. We're talking about the 3-liter inline six turbo diesel, the yes. smaller Duramax. And this came out of
a 2000 Silverado 1500.
Not a 2000, a 2021.
Oh, I'm sorry. A 2020 Silver. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yep. Yep. 2020 Silverado. So, again, this is another video from I Do Cars on YouTube. It's the same channel we were talking about last week. And this is another great video because it's another fresh teardown engine, for him. And
let's things go bad.
Let's just cut to the chase. I'll try not to get too technical. I'm not a certified mechanic by any means.
When you see what happened, anyone can look at a cylinder and say, "Oh, they're not supposed to look like that."
Well, but here's the thing. Let me explain, especially for the audio listeners that we still have out there. There was a massive engine failure on this one. If you don't know what an interference or non-interference engine is, I'll explain it to you this way. A non-interference engine, because you have pistons that go up and then you have valve train on top that operates, that go down. A non-interference engine, if things aren't timed exactly right, the pistons and the valves will still never hit. It just won't run. On an interference engine, the tolerances are so tight. If the timing of the engine is off to some degree, the pistons will hit the valves, and that's a bad day for everybody. And I just learned this when I found this video. The 3-liter Duramax inline six diesel is an interference engine. And as this disassembly is taking place, again, like we had last week, it's a bit of an investigation. Okay, what's going on with this? Why is this why is this engine bad? And the cam covers are the cam cover is off. Some of the other covers are off, and he notices. Before we get there, he notices, wow, look at this timing chain. There's a lot of slack in this chain.
Yes, that's true.
That's not a good sign. So yes, the head comes off of the cylinder. We can look at all six pistons. On some engines, the pistons, especially if the tolerances are very close and it's an interference engine, some pistons do have indents made
not
into
like
them
this.
for proper valve clearance. Like I mention this because when you take the head off, you think, oh, these pistons were made with valve indents for extra clearance. No, they're not supposed to have those. That's where the valves contacted every single piston, and not lightly. I mean, those look like manufactured to me. They look like manufactured indents into the pistons for valve clearance, and they are not supposed to be there. And that's just one of those, oh, there's your problem moments. It's that, I mean, it's that obvious. And it's just one of those things. If you don't really know what you're looking at, it doesn't make a lot of sense. But then once you understand the idea of, okay, an interference engine, a non-interference engine, what can happen? You look at that and you go, ooh. The force involved here to make those impressions, how deep are those? Did he say in the video? Because I only caught parts of the video.
They're around a millimeter.
Which doesn't sound like much, but that's a millimeter just pressed right into those pistons.
Right. Which are, they're not aluminum. I bet.
We're talking hardened materials in an environment where you're not supposed to be pressing those things together. And that well and truly wiped out that engine. Now, 2020, it came out of a 2020 Silverado.
Correct
me if I'm wrong, Bruce, but this is another case of we don't know if there were any sort of engine modifications. We don't know if the person was running a tune or anything of that nature.
No, we don't know about that. So the guy, Eric, who is from the I Do Cars channel, he came up with this hypothesis. And so he thinks that the engine was running low on oil, that there wasn't enough oil in the engine. And the reason he thinks that is that he took everything apart. Like, he literally took everything apart.
Every part,
looked at the oil sump, and there's a screen in the oil sump, and it was completely clean. But if you looked at everything else in the oil pan, it was filled with bits of metal. So clearly no oil was getting to the sump, that it wasn't pulling in that metal. So that is why he thinks this. And this engine uses an oil pressure powered timing tensioner. So the oil pressure, it goes through the tensioners, it holds on to the timing chain, it provides tension on that timing chain, and everything is supposed to work. But if there's not enough oil in that engine, then not enough pressure is going to that tensioner. And that is what he showed earlier on, that there's slack in the timing chain, and that could let it, jump a tooth or something like that. And the timing could be off, and that would allow the valves to do this massive carnage to the cylinders.
And it's carnage indeed. Bruce, I'm very glad you paused the video on this one section. For our audio listeners, let me just describe this. We're looking down the cylinder of a combustion engine, this 3-liter diesel. We're looking at the top of the piston. It looks like Mickey Mouse. You have the center of the piston where there's supposed to be a round indent, and then you have two mouse ears on both sides that looks like Mickey Mouse. They're perfectly formed round ears from these valves, and it's not like, oh, you can see where it just kind of scuffed the surface. They are pressed. I mean, like, legit pressed in there. And Group FBC actually made a comment here I want to share. I'm actually deeply impressed by the strength of the valve train to be able to cause that. I thought something similar. Bruce, did the video show the valves? Did we get a good look at the valves?
And so that's fascinating. Because this is a diesel engine and because it's an inline six, essentially the valves, rather than being angled, they go straight up and down. And that is kind of the magic of why this happened. So they came down, they pressed down, they did all of this pressure, and then they came back up. But rather than they never braked, they never bent, nothing like that happened. They just did this strong pressure downward into the cylinder, or into this piston, sorry, and then came back up. And it's just, it's wild. They didn't break, they didn't bend, they just
did this. Meanwhile, it occurred to me, sitting behind me for like the last several months here as we've been doing the podcast, I have a piston and a valve from a certain 1989 Ford Toro show that has a non-interference engine, mind you. Sucked a little bit of debris into the intake. I decided I would make a custom intake, and I ended up sucking in a bolt and some nuts that got sucked into one of the cylinders. I don't know if that shows up on the camera very well. That valve is not straight. that is very, very tipped to one side, just from hitting the nut and the bolt. And then, of course, it did a pretty good job mutilating the top of the piston. I don't know how clearly that comes through there for everybody there on video. I didn't reuse those bits. Fortunately, it didn't really scour the cylinder wall at all. So I sourced a replacement piston. I sourced a replacement valve. I had a new head, and I just had the head reconditioned, new valves put in, and I was back on the road. But yeah, that engine did not, the valve in that engine did not survive like this Duramax did. And we're looking at it now.
Right. I'm trying to find the right bit of film. So you can see here, these are the two valves that the two cylinders that took it the worst, the four valves, but they didn't break. They didn't bend. Like, you can see that they took damage, but like, it almost looks fine. it's shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking that whatever material they're making it out of could hit the cylinder with that much pressure, or hit the piston with that much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And be okay. It's
was there any damage on the bottom end of that engine?
There was, yes. So I'm gonna mess up my words here because my engine nomenclature is bad, and I'm gonna have to look at my story to be able to tell you what the right words are. But basically, one of the sorry folks, my engine words are not that great. There was a bit of the valve train, a bit of the bottom end that disintegrated. And that is essentially what all of the little bits of metal and big bits of metal that you see.
So are we talking like the main bearings or the rod bearings, or because I have to think with that kind of pressure, obviously it's pushing it made deep indents into the pistons. I have to think that force was felt down through the rod and into the bearings.
So, Smith, I'm telling you, pressure because jump.
I apologize because I didn't watch the video in full. I wanted to, but it's like a 45-minute video. Yes, and again, motor1.com. We actually have the article linked in our YouTube description. If you catch us on YouTube, motor1.com. I think it's still near the homepage. You know, towards the top. Might even still be in our slider because it's we just a lot of traffic on that one. It's a great video to watch, even if you know nothing about engines, and actually maybe especially if you know nothing about engines, because it's fascinating to see. It goes bit by bit by bit. When you get to the end, you think, maybe I could go take my engine apart. Don't try it. don't try it unless it's a parts car.
Smith, I'll be totally honest with you. It's not, I don't know the correct bit of nomenclature. It is the bit inside the engine, obviously. It is, so you've got piston, you've got connecting rod, you've got crankshaft, basically a bit of the connecting rod where that is going through.
On the rod, you have what they call the main bearings, and then you have the rod bearings.
Right. One of the rod bearings disintegrated. Okay. He's got five of those, and one of them is gone.
Okay.
It's just gone.
And I can imagine that being the case for sure.
Yes. So, yeah.
Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. Bruce, you did this write-up, and I mean, it's a great read. It's a great write-up.
I feel embarrassed that I couldn't think of the right words for that, though. Like, but there are so many different parts of an engine, especially once you get into it. Like, we were writing up a story today, and I had to look up the parts of a piston, and like, you know, what is the crown of the piston? The side. There are many parts of every part of an engine.
And oh, just wait. Just wait till you start tearing apart that 300ZX. No, you're gonna learn everything. You're gonna be like, man, I should have just bought a Volkswagen Beetle and been done with it.
Yeah, I probably should have. My dad would have been happier.
No.
Anyway,
not at all. On. Yeah. Well, there was something else I was gonna say before we moved on this. I mean, it's a 40-minute video.
It is. It's a really good video.
You did a great job summing up everything that's going on in that video. So yeah, definitely go and check it out, everybody. Even if you don't know engines, you'll learn something, and it's just amazing to see. And Group FBC, I love this comment. We got to share this before we go. Please. On the plus side, with those newly machined clearances, this is now a non-interference engine. Yeah,
that's true. He's right. Yeah, he's not wrong.
I think it might be a little noisy to run, just a little bit.
Yeah.
How much do you think it costs to repair that engine? How much do you think it would cost to replace?
To replace for a new LM2? I mean, this is totally off the top of my head. I bet it's between 8,000 and 10,000.
I was thinking it might be 51.7 million.
Oh, Smith, I love you, buddy.
That was a long way to go for that segue.
That was a good segue, though.
That was a long way to go. I that was such a long way. I was having second thoughts like a quarter of the way through. And then you started actually trying to answer the question. It's like, oh, hell, okay. Now I'm having third thoughts. Yes, 51.7 million. It won't cost that much to replace a 3-liter Duramax, but
it will not. I can promise you that.
It will, and it has cost one person that much to buy this 1962 Ferrari 250 GTO that recently went up for auction. We first heard about this, I think it was a couple months ago, when RM Sotheby's was teasing ago, this.
Yeah.
That this car was coming. This is a rather special 250 GTO.
Very special 250 GTO.
You know, because the others are just average GTOs. This is This is a special GTO. Well, Bruce, I mean, you wrote this up, and then I covered the auction after the fact. Tell us what makes this truly special.
Okay, so it's a complicated story, and so I'm going to try to keep it brief, but also try to keep things detailed. So if anyone has any questions, throw them into the chat. I might be able to answer them.
Or email podcast@motor1.com, and we will answer you back.
Yep.
Absolutely.
So this was a car that Ferrari made The 250 GTO is a very, very, very famous vehicle. It was an evolution of the 250 GT short wheelbase SWB, but it was essentially a pure racing version of that car that anyone, well, anyone with enough money could buy. And so this is one that the factory made, but they kept them for itself. And that's what makes this car special. And not only did they keep it for itself, rather than most of these cars received a 3-liter V12, this one from the factory received a 4-liter V12, so an even more powerful engine. So the factory kept it. They raced it itself. Its very first race was the 1962 Nürburgring 1,000-kilometer race. It came in, oh, crap, was it? I gotta double check that.
What was it? Was it a podium? I thought it was a podium.
It's either first in class, second overall, I believe. But now I gotta double check.
First in class finish at the 62 Nürburgring 1,000 kilometers. First in class,
and I believe it was second overall as well.
And so they were after going to race it at Le Mans, but
well, no, they did race it at Le Mans,
but it didn't finish.
It did not finish. The engine overheated, unfortunately.
Oh, that so 4-liter.
And a privateer, you know, some rich Italian guy came to them and said, hey, I want to buy this car. And so Ferrari did a complete 250 GTO restoration to this car. So that meant it got the 3-liter V12 and the appropriate transmission and stuff like that. And that guy then drove it around Italy. He competed in a lot of hill climbs. It was successful there. Fast forward several years, it eventually came to the United States. Someone from the American Motors Corporation, one of their engine kind of developer guys, he bought the car and, you know, kept it for a while. I don't believe that he raced it a lot, but he owned the car. So it's got kind of this weird American provenance to it. And then he sold it to another person. And that person lived in Ohio, down in Cincinnati. And that person, that was in 1985. And now finally to today, it finally went up for auction. And so it has huge provenance. Not only was it raced in the period, it also did a lot of historical races. It won the 2011, I believe, Amelia Concours d'Elegance. That was a best in show there. So just a special car. And now it came up for sale from RM Sotheby's. And it is now the most expensive Ferrari to ever sell at auction.
Yes, $57.1 million. That's the price after all of the fees. Yes. The hammer price was $47 million. I watched this live. We actually carried this live at Motor One. And if you click on the auction here, if you go to motor1.com, click on our article for this Ferrari auction, you can actually see that bid process as it happened. Mm-hmm. It's not like a regular auto auction where they're talking fast and blah, 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 you know, I can't talk that fast. I can hardly talk slow. Never mind fast. Very different setup, but you still, and I hate to say this, and I hope I don't offend anybody that might be listening, but even at that very, very professional, gorgeous looking high end auction house that they have wonderful cars. They do some great things. I still just got that kind of salesman vibe. And you're not talking about, oh, okay, hey, you want to buy this $10,000 car? It's like, hey, look at you, sir. I can see in your eyes. You're thinking about $49 million. You're thinking about $49 million. It's just, I got that same vibe and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It's like, it never changes. No matter how high the level gets, it's like it doesn't change. And obviously, I mean, hey, they want the car to bring as much money as it can. I mean, that's certainly more money for they get a cut. That's more money for the auction house. And I'm gonna say it here. I mentioned it. I think I mentioned it in the update to your article, Bruce. Could this be a bargain? Is it possible here's to say $51.7 million is a bargain? But yeah, here's the thing, right? Go ahead.
I kind of agree with you. This is, you know, all GTOs are special. This is the only GTO of this type that Ferrari actually raced, that Ferrari factory drivers actually raced. And then not only that, to have the additional provenance of, you know, oh, AMC's engine development guy, he owned this car. Or, oh, since 1985, this car has been, you know, it's a, you know, best of show winner at the Amelia Island Concourse. I kind of agree with you. Like,
it's ridiculous and absurd. If you had the
money, this feels like the one you would buy, and I'm surprised it didn't go for more.
I mean, I am not a pro when it comes to collector cars. I will say I have a lot of experience on the collector side, and I have some experience in vehicle values and valuations. So I'm not a complete amateur, but I'm not a pro, especially at this level. Especially at this level. I want to make that clear before I say this.
No. Yeah, of course.
I feel like the only way this doesn't go up in value is if the world ends.
Yeah.
Or there's some big apocalypse where it's like, okay, there are only like 5 cars left and this is one of them. And now we have to drive it Mad Max style. That's the only way. And maybe even then, I mean, maybe it goes from being 51.7 million to like worth 10 tankers of fuel and some water. I feel like the only way this doesn't go up in value is if that happens. And I think the auction house was expecting more because
I do too.
Prior to the auction, I mean, they had an estimate of 60 plus million was the estimate. And as the auction started, the bidding, you know, you're at a completely different level of, well, you know, you're in a completely different automotive universe. When you see an auction,
35 million.
Yeah, when you see an auction,
start at
35 million. Yeah. 35 million. Who's got 35? You've got 35 million. Say, so, okay, excellent. The bid is 35 million. 36. Do we hear 30? 36 over here. And it's just, oh my God. I'm debating supersizing my meal from McDonald's, and they're just 36 mil. Well, yeah, make it 37 mil, 38 mil. But I mean, it moved along pretty quick at first. And honestly, I think it was 44 or 45. And it kind of stalled there for a while. And it was like, well, this isn't going as quickly and as far as I was expecting. And maybe that's when I started to get a little bit of that classic sales vibe. Also, I see you thinking about the, don't wait another 38 years for this to come up. You want to get this right now, you know? Right.
I guess I wonder, are we living in that transitional period? Smith, I don't know, you know, you've got a few years on me, but do you remember back in the day? I remember watching like Barrett Jackson and stuff like that. And when I first started watching it, like,
I hope you say what I think you're going to say. Go ahead.
Like the Duesenbergs, the cords, the stuff like that would go for obscene prices. And then after that, the muscle cars, you know, your handful of, you know, Hemi Cuda convertibles and stuff like that would go for obscene prices. Are we starting to see that with these Ferraris? Is it that the people today that are out there are just starting to age out of it? And
I don't think that's the case with a vehicle like this.
Okay. That's
vehicles like this always were in kind of a class by themselves because of the rarity, because of the pedigree, if you will. That's not to say that this would have sold for $50 million back in the 80s. I mean, even adjusted for inflation, it wouldn't have been that, but it was still bringing much more than many other vehicles. Mm-hmm.
What were you thinking then? You seemed to think I was going to go somewhere and didn't go there. So what were you thinking?
Well, you started to go there because I observed the same thing, and I still have a very, it's like a snapshot in my head. It must drive my wife crazy that I can't remember things that might be considered more important. Like, oh, don't you remember when we went here and had that really nice dinner that night? No, I don't remember that, honey. I'm sorry. But I do remember the moment Brock Yates lost his mind when he was like, this 55 Chevy Nomad resto mod just brought more than this Ferrari something, something, something. It wasn't a GTO, but it was still, you know, an older classic Ferrari. And that was sort of that moment that you're talking about of kind of aging in and aging out. The era of the really expensive Duesenbergs and the Cords and like the V16 Cadillacs, the things from the 30s, they're still expensive. Don't get me wrong.
Well, some of them are.
I don't think they've really changed much value-wise over the last 25, 30 years.
Right. But meanwhile, like if you want a Model T, for example, prices on those haven't really changed. Like they've kind of just stayed flat.
Yep.
Which it, when you take it in terms of, you know, inflation, it kind of means the price has gone down.
Well, like I grew up. Let me give you this perspective, because this is something that I've actually watched and paid attention to. Okay. I grew up with a 1960 Cadillac in the family and a 1957 Thunderbird. No, I wasn't born in the 60s. We didn't have these new. We had these as classics through the 80s and the 90s. And 57 Thunderbird, at least, because I like those cars very much and I've often thought, I wouldn't mind having one. The values from the mid to late 90s to now haven't changed that much.
You're right.
And that's not accounting for inflation. Right. The one that we had, I think was value about maybe 25 grand or so. It was a nice driver, but it wasn't absolutely perfect. I could go out today and find a nice average condition 57 Thunderbird, good driver, not fully restored, but something you could still enjoy, drive around, take it to shows, get some attention for about the same price.
Totally.
And that's not accounting for inflation.
Meanwhile,
muscle cars during that time just went crazy and now they're coming back down. So yeah, I find that whole world very, very fascinating. And I rather enjoyed watching this 250 GTO go across the block.
I agree.
I went into it thinking, okay, well, I'm going to have to watch a bunch of rich people just play being rich. But no, it was interesting to watch. And I was a bit surprised that it didn't go a little bit higher, which brings me to my conclusion that maybe it's a bargain.
Yeah. Or what if it's not? What if the prices on these are going to start going down?
I mean,
what if that happens?
I mean, that's something to consider, but we're talking about something
they're never going to be affordable. Rare. Not to you and I. Like,
I mean,
$50 million is more than you and I are ever going to make in our entire lifetimes. True.
Unless, speak for yourself. I've still got a couple novels I'm trying to write. You never know. I could get a movie deal.
You better share with me then, buddy.
It could happen. I'll work you in there. We can get some royalties going.
Okay,
no. We're not talking about a 69 or 70 Dodge Charger, which are extremely valuable right now, but they made a lot of them. So it's not rare. There's just a lot of people right now that really want one. And actually, I think those are starting to come down a little bit.
They are.
This is something where I don't think you'll age out of a 250 GTO. I think there's going to be the core group that has money, that has resources, and they will be willing to pay handsomely when the opportunity arrives.
Okay. Should we move on to our cheap car challenge before we finish off for tonight?
Yes. Mungor 8, thank you for joining us and commenting. Is this eligible for the cheap car challenge?
Sure.
the cheapest. Okay. That's the next cheap car challenge, Bruce. Find the cheapest Ferrari 250 GTO. Yeah, actually, it's not this one because it's the most expensive, but it still could be a bargain.
Exactly.
No, all right. So cheap car challenge time. Ramblers, if you were listening here at the beginning of the show and you have any shares, any cars that you want to share with us, drop them into the chat wherever you're at. Motor1.com on Facebook, Motor1.com Twitter, Motor1 YouTube. If you're just tuning in and you're like, what the hell's going on? You have like 5 minutes. Five minutes. Find the most interesting and or fun Toyota Camry that you can. I'm not even going to put a price on this.
You just have to find the most interesting Camry in the world.
Makes this interesting. And Bruce, do you want to go first with your cheat pick? Let me guess. You've got a Camry Solara, don't you?
No.
I mean, you can technically work that in, and it's a two-door convertible.
No. I found a 1979 Toyota Corona, which was the predecessor to the Camry.
That's not bad.
$4,900. It's got some really crappy wheels on it. And wait till you see the interior that is apparently made out of blankets, a variety of blankets.
I'm pretty sure I saw those seat covers at Meyer Thrifty Acres in like 1987. Dude,
these are not seat covers. Someone made these because everything matches. Look, there's the steering wheel.
You could have found those seat covers somewhere.
There's a big lots
somewhere, probably in the central or southern U.S. And I'm not drawing any specific attention to those regions. There's probably a big lots there, like 30 years ago, where you could have gotten that package.
But $4,900 right now, it is in Cleveland, Ohio. It looks very nice. It's got crappy wheels. It is the predecessor to the Camry. But it exists. Someone could buy this car.
I mean, yeah, you cheated. But
I know I cheated.
I can't really fault you because there is a connection here. It's the predecessor to the Camry. It's a four-door Toyota. I mean, there were some Cressidas I could have chosen that I didn't.
The Cressida was a step up.
There were some Avalons that I could have chosen, but I didn't.
Okay. Oh yes, Bruce, I wholeheartedly approve of you cheating. Yeah. This is, you know.
Wait a minute. Are you able to zoom in on that side picture at all?
Of course I can, buddy.
Are you able to zoom in?
I can zoom in all day long. What are we zooming in on?
Is that a painted stripe?
I see no stripes. I just see a shadow.
There's no painted stripes?
I don't think so.
There's no painted on stripes.
It's
a fail.
There's no painted on stripes. I don't think so.
But they're painted.
The whole car's painted, but no, look. That's just a piece of trim. Those are trim.
I'm messing with you, buddy.
I know. No. Look at that side. There's some chrome.
It actually looks really good. I would approve of you going to buy this.
Well, I wouldn't. I've got one car. I've got one project car that doesn't run. I don't need two.
Well, I have one that doesn't run, doesn't move, and the Subaru is quickly becoming another project because I still have belt issues, but that's another podcast for another time.
You said you got that fixed.
So did I, and then I was 200 miles away at the coolest toy store I've pretty much been to in the last 2 years.
You shared those photos with me. That you're right.
And started the car, and hey, the belt's club.
You know, the fact that... Who's stealing this car? What degenerate is stealing a 1979 Corona?
It looks good though. I like it.
Yeah.
I wanna not approve of the cheat, but I think I have to kind of approve of the cheat.
Yeah. Okay. You're up.
Well, I mean, if you cheated, then I have to cheat too, right?
You're allowed. Yeah, bud.
Except I didn't. Come on, man. You know how hard it is to find a Toyota Camry V6 5-speed manual? I think this is the only one I was able to find in like a 500-mile radius, and it's not that far from me. It's in Illinois, so it's about a 3.5-4-hour drive. But yeah, they did make. I think they made a manual Camry all the way up through 2011, but I think the last V6 was somewhere around 2000-2001. And this is a 1999 model, a 1999 Toyota Camry LEV6, which, if memory serves me correct, that engine stock would be around 200 horsepower, so not a lot of power by any means.
It's pretty good.
But 5-speed manual, turn in the front wheels, drop the clutch, smoke out the neighborhood with your front-wheel drive burnout in your 4-door Camry. What? How does that happen? And this one looks pretty good. They're asking $6,300, which... What's that? You want to see the interior?
Pictures. I want to see the interior.
Oh, the interior.
Fine. That's a good-looking car.
Yeah, I mean, this one is actually in pretty good shape all around. Let me just read the description here. Rare Toyota Camry V6 5-speed manual, engine, transmission, very rare nowadays. Car is in great condition, both the exterior and interior. The photos look great. Drove it to South Carolina and back this summer, no problems. It's had a lot of work done, including the timing belt, water pump and pulley, serpentine belt. Hopefully those belts don't squeal. Maybe I'll sell the Subaru and get this. The spark plugs are done. Got new headlights. Be changing out some more wear items. It looks good all around. It's the 5-speed. Yeah. It's red on the outside. Nice tan interior. It's a deeper red. It's a Camry. It doesn't set the world on style or on fire with its styling, but that's sort of
they've never set the world on fire.
It's part of the appeal, right? I would almost call this something of a sleeper because the 200 horse with the 5-speed, the Maximas of this era were, I think, 195 or 200 horse with a 5-speed. And a lot of people consider those kind of sporty sedans. The 5-speed shows leading up to this in 95, that was the last year for the V6 and the manual. Those were 220 horse. So, I mean, this really isn't far behind some other sedans that had sport cred back in the day. Sneaky performance looks pretty good. I think I would enjoy the hell out of driving that.
I got no fight with you there, bud.
Especially pulling up to a light and, oh, you look at the Camry, and then you just do a minor drop clutch and just, you know, leave a pair of 100-foot marks exiting the intersection. Don't do that ever, though. That should only be done at the track, folks. For all the ramblers out there, drive safely, smartly, and sensibly.
Okay. So can I show you the other car I found, which absolutely, is not because- a cheater?
Because I found another one too.
Okay, so we'll do one each. This is my other pick. This is a 1990 Toyota Camry. And the only reason I say this is my second pick, so the asking price is $5,000. However, the seller says, just want to see what offers I get. Not really in a rush to sell it. It's a classic and a beautiful car. There's nothing wrong with it at all. Drives perfect. Up for trades or cash. Give me a call. This is a gorgeous 1990 Toyota Camry.
It is.
Like, look at it. Like, that car looks perfect.
Nobody paid attention to it back in the day. Now, you could be the king of Radwood with that car.
Yeah. The owner has some very hairy legs. That's not something, not a judgment. That's the truth. But like, this car is perfect for $5,000, 134,000 miles for a 1990 Camry. That's like nothing. That's like no miles on a Camry.
Yeah. Tear that engine down. Oh, look, the valves hit the pistons and the engine didn't care. It's still fine.
I even doubt that. Like, yeah. It's in perfect shape. It's in Lima, Ohio, not Lima. It is not Lima, Peru. Trust me, I am an Ohio native. I've lived here forever. LIMA is Lima, Ohio. It's like, that's a gorgeous car.
Yeah.
It really is.
I mean, it looks great. And I found a few like this. They had me thinking, oh, maybe that would be nice. I found a couple wagons. Camry wagons are pretty rare to find. And I'm kind of a wagon guy. And I found a couple. But then I thought, okay, it's neat. But how quickly would it be not interesting? And I feel like it would be a novelty for a little while, and then it would wear off. And maybe that V6 manual Camry would be the same way. I don't know, but I feel like I could at least, if I was getting really bored with it, just go do some stupid crap with it, like take it to a drag strip and just do big burnouts in the burnout box, and have people just laughing. Hey, look at that Camry. You know, I feel like I could reclaim a little bit of that. Let me share the other one that I found. And actually, I found two more.
The night. Let's go for it.
Both of them are similar. I'm only going to show this one, though.
Pick one.
Because this, not only do I find it interesting, but I think it really fits with the cheap in Cheap Car Challenge, because this is $1,200. It's a 1996 Toyota Camry LE Coupe. Two-door. They did make a Camry two-door before
for a little while.
Before the Solara, they did have the Camry LE two-door coupe. Not only is this an LE two-door coupe, it also has a manual. Now, I don't...
Dude, you found the true rarities.
I don't know if it's a V6. I'm guessing it's probably a four-cylinder. I'm guessing it's probably a four-cylinder. This ad doesn't specify what's under the hood. There is actually a lot that we don't know. I'm assuming at $1,200, there's a lot that it needs. Looking at the photos here, I mean, we can see the body is black, and it looks like there's been quite a bit of body work or filler around the fenders, spots on the door. The rear bumper doesn't look great, to be honest. Looks like some paint blown off on the driver's side.
Love.
But the seller's description: runs good, brand new clutch and master cylinder. We don't know what engine is under the hood.
We don't know what engine's under the hood is a interesting topic.
But maybe there isn't even one there. Hard to say. But Toyota Camry two-door coupe manual. Technically, I guess you would call that a two-door sedan, because there's still the B-pillar in there. If you want to start getting really technical on the terminology, two doors, you know, coupe doesn't automatically mean two doors. So you might consider it a two-door sedan. But for our purposes, a two-door Camry, go ahead and call it a coupe with a stick. I don't know. That's all I got. I did find another Camry two-door. It was an automatic. It was in much better shape. It had been repainted. It was lowered. It had some wheels. It was in Chicago. It looked pretty good, but I would get bored with that pretty quick. The manual makes anything fun, man.
That's true. Group of FBC. So you're saying there's a chance there's a V8 under the hood? Could be.
LS swap.
Yep.
LS swap.
So, folks, we're going to shut things down for tonight. I do want to say next week is going to be, for any of our non-American listeners, is going to be Thanksgiving. If you have any questions for us, please send them in, because oftentimes this is going to be a slow news week in terms of automotive stuff. So if you have questions for us, we'll be happy to ask them. And it doesn't, like, hell, I don't even care if they're not automotive questions. Ask me about my favorite movie, my favorite color, my favorite dog. I don't know.
Let's try to make it automotive themed.
Smith's wrong. Whatever questions you want to ask.
Send us your project cars. Tell us about your project cars.
Got project cars. This is the perfect time.
Is a good time. We can talk about that. As we said last week, we are looking at changing some things up here after the first of the year with rambling about cars. So absolutely, now is the time. podcast@motorone.com. Email us. What do you like about the podcast? What would you like to see more of? What would you definitely not like to see more of?
Yeah, what would you like to see more of? What would you like to see less of? What would you
go wild with it? let your imaginations run wild, because you know we are here, and we're excited to see what else we can do, and we want to do a good podcast for all the ramblers out there.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be, you know, next week will be an interesting one. It might be a short episode just because it's going to be the week before, or the day before Thanksgiving. Sorry, not the week before.
Do you want to set up a cheap car challenge right now?
Whew. I want our listeners to give us a cheap car challenge.
Oh, okay. There we go.
Any listeners who are still listening, what is our cheap car challenge next week? Give us a theme and we will try to do it.
Drop it in comments. We'll check comments here at YouTube, Motor One on YouTube, Motor One.com on Twitter, Motor One.com on Facebook, and email us podcast@motorone.com.
Totally.
What is your cheap car challenge for us next week?
Yeah.
And we'll see what we can do from there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. But otherwise, you know, we always love doing the show. We still love doing the show. This is episode 150. So it's kind of
150.
A hallmark episode for us. That fact we've been doing the show for so long, and we're going to keep doing this show. But we love all of you folks. We love all of you listeners, and we're going to sign off now. So good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. You know, we appreciate all of you. But yeah, please throw out a concept for a cheap car challenge, for a segment you want to hear us talk about. Do you have, like, you know, group of FBC, you live in Australia. Do you want us to talk about Australian cars for a little bit? I don't know that I can, but by God, I'll try to, you know, just whatever. Like, I, you know, we're kind of getting to that time of year when car news starts to slow down, and it'll be fun to kind of do, to challenge ourselves, I guess, for lack of a better word. So let's do it. But yeah, Smith, do you have anything you want to end with?
Just, I really want to see some emails. podcast@moto1.com. Give us some feedback.
Cool. All right, man. Then that'll be that. And we will talk to you folks next week. And everyone have a nice week. Everyone have a healthy week. Bye-bye.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.